Welcome to Intuitive Bites Podcast. I'm your host, Kirsten Ackerman, the Intuitive RD. I'm a non-diet registered dietitian and intuitive eating coach. My mission is to help women recover from diet culture and heal their relationship to food and body. Follow along as I speak with leading professionals in the field and explore concepts of intuitive eating, health at every size, and body liberation.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 175 of Intuitive Bites. Today I'm chatting with Sarah Dozange, who you may know from Instagram as the_binge_eating_therapist. And we're talking all about different types of binges and how binge eating can present in very different ways for a lot of people. So I think you're going to find this interesting, especially if you do identify as struggling with binge eating at certain times. You're going to see yourself in probably several different of these different types. Before we dive into today's episode, I also want you guys to know that if you are a mom, maybe a new mom, and you're working on intuitive eating, you want to pass down a healthy relationship to food to your kids, so you're trying to do the work, but being a mom presents unique challenges with trying to eat intuitively. The lack of time, you know, the guilt and shame, the body changes, like so many different things going on. So if that is you, I would love to invite you to come to the free masterclass that I am hosting on Tuesday the 16th. So just a few days away if you're listening to this live. So April 16th at 12 p.m. Eastern time. Again, totally free. I'm going to put the link below this episode so you can register for that, or you can find it over on my Instagram at @theintuitive_RD. All right, guys, let's go ahead and listen into my conversation with Sarah.
Trying to put as much information out there in all the different ways I could possibly think of.
Yes, I love that. Sounds very reminiscent of just, me kind of, it sounds like you kind of got in the therapy field and then were simultaneously having your struggles and then kind of decided to go this route in the field because of your struggles, right?
Yeah. So when I first started training to be a therapist, I was still struggling with all this stuff. Yeah. And there was a little voice in the back of my head that I thought, oh, if I ever manage to figure out this crazy world of binge eating, maybe I could see myself helping other people. But that wasn't my sole intention when I was studying. But I guess part of studying to be a therapist, you have to go into your own therapy. You end up required to have several years of therapy, which no doubt helped, even though the therapist didn't have a clue when it came to binge eating. So they didn't always say the most helpful things. But yeah. I think it was a part of my recovery, but not the whole story.
For sure. That's interesting. Yeah, I always think that's interesting that that's kind of a requirement of becoming a therapist. And I feel like dietitians should have something similar, especially given that dietitians, like there's such a high co-occurrence of like disordered eating behaviors. It's like, oh, maybe we should have our own, you know, therapy slash like disordered eating counseling type stuff. So very interesting.
Yeah. It's high, isn't it? Do you get supervision? And do you talk about that kind of thing in supervision or not?
Good question. So it's not required by any means, but it is something that like some of the professionals in the space do. But I feel like it needs to become more ingrained in like our culture as dietitians, for sure. There's room to grow there.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit more about binge eating. So this is like, you know, your bread and butter. Something caught my attention on your Instagram, which was basically like the different types of binge eating that you kind of defined through your journey and collaborating with other people. So can you just speak to like some of the different kinds of binges that might give people more clarity on like maybe which ones that they're struggling with?
Yeah, I think it might be helpful just to differentiate between a clinically diagnosable binge and how we just use the word anyway.
Yes.
Because there is a clinical definition for a binge, and I don't know if it's the most helpful, but it goes something like this. It's eating within a 2-hour window an amount of food that is definitely larger than most people would eat in similar circumstances, and you feel like you're out of control. Considering this is supposed to be a clinical definition, you can see how subjective this is already, how different practitioners are going to interpret that.
Yes.
And this has only been a definition, like a standalone diagnosis, since 2013. So these doctors who would probably have got, I mean, I don't know how much training they get. Do they just get notified about new diagnoses that they read about?
I don't know.
But it's getting missed. But
yes.
I also think the word binge isn't owned just by the clinical world as well, because we use this word all the time colloquially too. So it's a big word with many different meanings. And even if someone feels like their eating might be into binge eating territory, but it doesn't meet the clinical definition of a binge, it could still very much fall under disordered eating. It could be just as distressing. It could take over your life in the same way. So part of the reason of identifying different binges was to kind of widen this scope so that people feel like this problem is valid and they're not just defaulting to, I don't have willpower and I just need to put in more rules.
Right. And I feel like that is such a common thing to be like, oh, binge eating is like over there. And like, being invalidating themselves, right? And being like, okay, I don't align with like that definition. So I guess it's not a problem, but like, it doesn't feel good. So what is it? And yeah, I could see, like you said, resorting back to kind of diet culture rules that are probably just going to make it all worse.
Yeah. Yeah. So the main things that looking at is that feeling of that you're out of control. I think that really does need to be there in a binge. You feel out of control. You feel like you've eaten a lot more than you wanted to. So for some people, that could be like a candy bar or something like that. And somebody, it could be bigger. But the subjective experience, I think, is so important. Like, as a therapist here in the UK, I don't officially diagnose. I'm more interested, what is someone's actual experience with something like that? So I think the quantity of food, when we're talking about how this can take over someone's life, I don't know if it's that relevant. It might be relevant when we're trying to understand extreme hunger and what's going on in the rest of their eating.
Yeah.
But for somebody to identify and go, like, I think I have a problem with this and I deserve help and I want to understand it in a psychological and emotional way, then I want everybody to feel like that is accessible and perfectly valid for them to do.
Yeah, that's really helpful. I'm glad that you're saying that. So what are some of the different ways that binge eating can present, or like some of those different scenarios, I guess, that people might be experiencing this in?
Yeah. One of the ones I really liked when I first read the Intuitive Eating book back in 2010, when I heard about Last Supper eating, it just made so much sense to me, because I was in the camp of, I thought to myself, I don't do any proper restriction. I've never managed to lose a large amount of weight. I would look at people who managed to restrict, even though they were struggling with binge eating and they were really distressed about it. And in my disordered thinking at the time, I remember thinking, well, at least you can restrict. Like, yes. I can see what's happening here with you. I'm not able to. I'm telling myself every day I'm going to try. Yeah. And then every day I feel like I've blown it. And then there's the what the hell effect. I'll start again tomorrow. I'll do better tomorrow. And gosh, that was like Groundhog Day. And I think Last Supper eating is such a lovely concept to really help people understand just the role of planning to restrict and how that can affect your eating. So I think that one I'd almost want to put right up there, because I think it will relate to a lot of people.
I agree, because you're right. There's so many people that I hear that compliance all the time. They're like, yeah, I have no ability to restrict. I wish I could restrict more. I can't get myself to do it. And they don't realize that there is so much of that mental restriction at play, and that planning to restrict is so key. So yeah, that's a big one. I agree.
Yeah. Another one is the slow binge. So, because of course the clinical definition is, it's got to be in a 2-hour window. It's got to be in this part. Sense of time. So if anybody is not eating quickly, rapidly, out of control in a 2-hour window, but they feel like they're going through this constant grazing that really does feel, and it's the emotional experience of feeling that out of control, you're not making the choices. It's like your legs are just getting you up and walking you into the kitchen or taking you to the shops. And that one, again, is like, tends to, not always, but tends to have more of like a soothing element to it, like a self-soothing thing. It could, for me, it always felt a little bit more like a, I don't know that it was always emotional. I think certainly for me, I would sometimes have foods in the house, but I wasn't really feeling free about them. So when they were in the house, they would still call out to me. Mm-hmm. And I would still feel like I could go into this autopilot thing, because if I stopped and thought about it and tried to make a decision, I would feel conflicted and get in a battle with myself. So I'd almost bypass that. There's no point battling with myself about these, because I know how it's going to end anyway. And then I would beat myself up more, because I'm not even trying to fight it. I'm just giving in all the time. Mm-hmm. And I see people falling into that trap a lot as well.
That's an interesting one. Yeah. Yeah. Just kind of, I mean, I don't know if you call it like rebellion, but just, yeah, just kind of leaning into it and accepting it, mm-hmm. and feeling maybe powerless to it as well.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
One of the other ones I know that you mentioned on that list, one of them was like planned binge. I don't know what you called it, but like setting out and being like, yes, I'm gonna binge and I'm gonna go like collect all the foods and like do all the things. Can you speak to that one a little bit more?
Yeah, there's usually again a couple of ways because most of us don't live lives that we can just stop and binge whenever we feel like it. We might be at work or we might have people around us. For whatever reason, it's not possible. And again, I think this is where people get a bit confused because they think, well, I'm not, how can I be out of control if I'm planning it? Like if I know that this is coming. And I think it can come up in a couple of ways. One, the scarcity mindset can be a bit around that. Like, oh, I know that my partner goes out on a Friday night, so I know that that's going to be my window of opportunity. So already there's that build up kind of as it's coming nearer as well. I
Yes.
think as well, for sometimes for people, it's a real way to almost bring themselves down at the end of the day. If you're up here in your stress response, you're feeling overwhelmed. You fill yourself up with food at the end of the day, and that's going to stimulate the parasympathetic nervous system, which is going to calm you down. The brain's almost crying out for reward when people talk about food as a sense of reward, because that those reward pathways in the brain are not being activated by anything else. So food becomes the rewarding thing in life. So
Yeah.
therefore, food is often in those situations perhaps more of a symptom of another problem, even though the food can become a problem in and of itself as well.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's a really helpful way to think about it because this is a conversation I have with clients a lot. It's like if we just rip away the food from that scenario, then we're just left with this gaping hole and we still don't have the thing that we need. So I guess like yeah, as a therapist, like what how do you kind of tackle that with clients where they feel like food is their only comfort or joy or pleasure that they're turning to?
It often, I find that many people who turn to food in those kinds of situations, they tend to be the helpers, everyone, the people who are looking after everyone else, the people pleasers as well. So sometimes what often happens, people are losing a lot of energy because they're not saying no where they need to say no. And so boundaries is often one of the first places we just might look to see is energy being lost in feeling like your boundaries are being constantly breached because they're not actually in place. So where in life do you need to start saying no? And don't get me wrong, some people have very busy lives and a lot of responsibilities, and you can't just say, no, kids, I'm not feeding you today. But all those other little places, there are usually a lot of places where people are saying yes and they want to say no, where people are giving out, giving out, giving out. And not like how they're not giving anything back to themselves. And food is such a quick, instant, easy way to do that. So then sometimes we're getting into like questions of worth. And this can then go back to some really early stuff in terms of how they experience themselves and the difficult relationship they have with being their own ally and taking care of themselves, you know, in a way that's more than just bubble baths and getting your nails done, all those kinds of things. But if you like those, do those. But I think sometimes people find that kind of self-care talk a bit frustrating.
Right. There's so much to more to that conversation. Yeah, I love that. And it's helpful to just like see how quickly it can like go back to so many deeper things of just like, yeah, taking care of yourself and being on your own team. So I guess a question about some of these different types of binges. Do you find that a lot of people who struggle with binge eating struggle with a lot of them? Or is it more likely that you only struggle with a couple? Is there any like pattern there?
It's a good question. I don't know that I've seen a pattern. I think it varies massively. Sometimes people come and it is just one or two. And for some people they come to me and it's not binging that's the problem at all. It's restriction. And actually, if we deal with the restriction, the binging sorts itself out. That's not everybody, but there are quite a number of people that that's the issue. And they're coming because they're saying, teach me how to not binge. And I'm like, oh, we need to learn how to not restrict. And it's not the news anyone wants to hear. They don't want to hear that at all.
Right? Because they're like, nope, my problem is binging.
Or emotional eating. I'm an emotional eater. Until we deal with the restriction, we can't do the emotional eating work because we won't even be able to tell what's going on there. And then now and again, this doesn't happen very often, Kirsten, but now and again, someone will come along and it fascinates me the couple of times it's happened. And it will just be like they're not living the life they want to live. Like maybe they're in a job that they don't want to be in, or they're in a relationship that they don't want to be in, or they want this, or they want that. Something really big is off in their life. And we're working around that. And they change that thing. And the food isn't a problem.
Wow.
Again, not often. I mean, less than 1%. But when that happens, I'm always like, could it really be that for some people? Like, one person just needed to learn how to rest.
Yeah.
And once they'd figured out how to find ways to rest, like their urges just diminished.
Well, that's incredible. Yeah. I can see it though. I can see it. Yeah. If like that's just kind of the function of the binging for them and it's just remove that. So I feel like the people listening to this, you know, anyone that's struggling with binge eating can often feel just like defeated and discouraged. And like, it feels like an impossible cycle to get out of. I mean, you were explaining for you how it was like, you know, you wake up in the day and you're like, okay, I'm going to be good today. And then it just, you know, goes to chaos and it just repeats. So what would be your first piece of advice for somebody that feels like very stuck in the cycle right now?
Find voices out there who are talking about recovery that you resonate with. So whether that's people who follow your content, they'll follow you, especially those that engage with your posts a lot. They're following you because when you speak, like it resonates, it rings true to them. And there might be other people who have a different experience with food that will listen to you and go like, it's not resonating with me on the same level. So I think when we're in it, we're so lost, we're so confused that we can't see the wood for the trees. And so just having those voices out there, like something to hold on to, I think, especially because a lot of this work involves changing the way we think and questioning our values and opening up other possibilities, which can feel, it's really hard to just change your mind with your mind without any sort of external input. So of course, if you can work with someone professional, that's great, but that's not possible for everyone. But there are quite a few communities out there. There are low-cost communities, no-cost communities that you can engage and meet other people with as well. We have a whole, quick plug, we have a whole community around our podcast, Life After Diets, and that's £10 a month to join that. And we have monthly calls and people in our community have met up outside of that. And then they do things together. And that just, to me, that's wild that they find each other just through listening to our podcast. It's just, it's incredible. So cool.
And I feel like with something like binge eating, it's so isolating, right? I feel like that's one of the parts of it, there's like the guilt and the shame and the isolation. So that's why, connecting with others who get it and are like, me too, can just be such a key part of starting that healing process.
Yeah. And it's one of my favorite pieces of feedback. If someone leaves a comment and they say, I found your content and it's just made me realize I'm not alone. I'm not the only one. We can have that feeling of resonance. So when I'm talking about connecting with other people, for some people might be more introverted or who just don't necessarily want to have like one-on-one relationships with people. You can kind of choose where you come in online. You can just engage in posts with other people or you can join groups. It's like you can get as much contact and connection as you feel like you need, kind of depending on your own temperament.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. And it makes it more kind of accessible and it doesn't have to look one way. I like that. Are there any go-to like tips or not even tips, like tools or exercises or like journal prompts that you often give to like a new client that or a new patient that's coming and struggling with binge eating that someone might benefit from today?
Well, one of my favorite questions to ask someone, and this is not when someone's restricting, so that part needs to be kind of worked with first. But when people are like trying to work out, am I in like a habit thing of always having this thing that I feel like I can't have? Is this emotional? What's going on? Is one of my favorite questions to encourage people to ask themselves. And it's simply when you're feeling a desire for a food and it's not a mealtime or something, a snack or whatever, and you're not sure whether it's a bit compulsive or not. It's that kind of slightly uncomfortable wanting. Is to, first of all, the first few times you do this, have the food. Don't turn it into a battle with yourself. But it's pausing and asking the question, what happens if I don't? Because when you get in a habit, and especially when there's been a lot of emotion around something, our habits are even more ingrained. So it's like once we're on that neural network of, oh, I start thinking about the food and I want the food, that can happen sort of outside of restriction as well. And so for some people, it's like, well, once I think about the food, I can't stop thinking about the food until I have it. Because the brain, it's almost like a transition thing. The brain can't switch tracks and go, what does it look like if you have a dessert every single day? What does it look like not to have a dessert every day? Knowing that it's okay to have a dessert every day, I make sure. understand whether this desire, did I jump there?
Yeah, we cut out for a second there.
Mm-hmm.
You're back now.
That's okay. Okay. Is when people are trying to understand their desire for a food, is that can be a helpful question because, and then just notice the reaction. So when you say what happens if I don't, is the reaction visceral? Is it a thought? What might be going on? And trying to get a bit more information from that while still having the food to try to make a bit of sense. And also sometimes people say, I don't know if a desire for a food is a binge urge or not. And in those moments, I was like, just slow it down. Because you're better off going, let me eat this food, but just really intend to enjoy it. Maximize enjoyment. That doesn't have to look like perfect mindful eating. That could be like putting your favorite TV show on, but it's intentional and it's conscious and it's experiencing and it's slowing down. And I would find that when my urges were more bingy, there was a lot of resistance that I didn't want to slow down. But people go all or nothing with mindful eating. And that's the biggest issue with that. It's either like, okay, I have to be eating really slowly. And for many people, the goal of mindful eating is trying to eat less. And then that in and of itself becomes a problem.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, I appreciate that nuance of mindful eating. So I'm always having that conversation with clients of like, it doesn't have to be like sitting there in silence without the TV on, like paying attention to every bite, right? It could be a mindful moment or whatever, or just that like brief slowing down. But I really appreciate everything you just said there about like, first of all, like the first few times, just like go for the food, don't get in the battle. Because I think it's so easy for people to get into that place of like, should I or shouldn't I? Am I really hungry or am I not? And I can't figure it out. So maybe I just won't. Maybe I'll just go drink some water. Like, it's so easy to default to that place of restriction. And then I like the idea too of like exploring it and being curious and slowing down while still allowing permission so that you're not like creating that scarcity that's like so quick to come in.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and with the mindful thing, I sometimes just say to people, what does being 20% more mindful than you currently are look like? And so sometimes we'll do things like listening to a podcast while eating so that you can see your food, but you've got something engaging to listen to, because particularly if there's a lot of fear and a lot of guilt around food, even if you're trying to work on this permission, you can end up with a lot of food noise, which can make it feel impossible to enjoy your food as well.
So it can be really helpful, right, to have some sort of engagement. I like that. Okay, well, thank you so much for everything you've shared today, Sarah. I would love for you
you're
to
tell
people where they can find you and, you know, where you're at online, any offerings that you have.
Sure. So I'm the Binge Eating Therapist on Instagram and YouTube. I'd probably say YouTube is my preferred platform where I think I put most of my content. I also have a podcast, which I do with Stephanie Michelle, called Life After Diets. Find that in all the usual places. I have a book called I Can't Stop Eating. That's available on Amazon. And you said this is going out in April. If there's any UK people who are around in May and would like to come to Brighton to meet me, Stephanie, and Marcus Kane. I don't know if you know Marcus Kane.
Oh, I don't.
MK Coaching, I think he is online. Really interesting story, very much kind of in this whole like space of healing your relationship with food. But he comes at it, he used to be, or still is very much in the personal training world, but gotcha. Having a much healthier approach to that. And so we're doing an evening event together where, and I've got to try and remember what it's called now. It's something... something about like, do you know what? Something about non-dieting and wellness. Can it work? Something
okay.
like that.
All right. That sounds amazing though. That sounds so fun.
Cool. It is. And doing something in person. I'm just excited about that because you must have the same thing. So much of what we do is online these days.
So much. Yeah. It's like so powerful to get to actually connect in person every now and again. That's awesome. Thank you so much, Sarah. I will share the links below so people can find you. And yeah, thanks again for being here.
Thank you, Kirsten.
All right. That's a wrap on today's episode. If you want to follow Sarah, you can find her on Instagram at @the_binge_eating_therapist. And also don't forget to register for the free Intuitive Eating for Motherhood Masterclass on Tuesday, April 16th from 12 to 1 Eastern Time.
If you are a new mom, if you are struggling with figuring out how to navigate intuitive eating and motherhood, both for yourself, but also so you can model that for your children, this is going to be the perfect masterclass for you. I'm leaving the link below so you can register that way, or follow or find me over on Instagram at @theintuitive_RD, and you'll be able to register that way as well. I hope you guys have a great week, and I'll talk to you soon.